The story I want to tell you today has to do with two papers that we released recently. So the last one, I wrote these papers in collaboration with Soria Das and Mark Walton from the University of Leipzig as well. And the last paper was released last week, so it's quite recent, right? So, as you can read in the title, I'm going to talk, this is an investigation between two concepts that are many times together in quantum gravity and other times separate and stuff. So it's just an investigation of how they relate each other. So gravity and no locality. How can you know if we can establish some relation? And basically the big claim, and it's not what I'm gonna prove today, but it's what is in my mind, and I'm just gonna give you some evidence, some significant evidence that this can be true. So the big claim is that gravity and the degrees of freedom of gravity can be induced by a no local theory, quite a general no local theory. So the idea is that an arbitrary or a general no local theory with some assumptions, but quite general, induce naturally gravity. So this is the idea. So as I said, this is a big claim. So it's very hard to prove such a statement. But so what I do is, to choose a no local theory, there are many ways of saying that a theory is non-local. Basically, if there is an action at a distance, so it's non-local. So, but how you organize non-local theories? So there are several ways. I will just talk a little bit about them, but it's just choose one way of organizing it. So the organization of a theory being local, bilocal, trilocal, depending on the fundamental field, to depend on one or two or three points in space-time and so on. So this is a way of organizing it. It's not the only way. There's one way of organizing it. And then that, as we will see, permits me to find what I call minimal deviation from locality. So look, you have a local theory. So the idea is like to consider theories that are close to locality. And so we're going to consider bilocal theories. So, okay. So... this is the menu. So I will start with some motivation. If I'm gonna compare these two theories, so bilocal theory and gravity, so I will compare them perturbatively. So I just gonna talk a little bit about some generalities of perturbative method in gravity, and the method that we'll use in which is a general method. Perturbative method for field theory, and then I will introduce the bilocal model as being minimal, so some sensible model which has the minimal ingredients to assure no locality and some reasonable assumptions, and then we will see how this model encodes gravity, so how it encodes it, right? And we'll talk about future work. So this is what I want to do today. So, okay. So this is part of the motivation. Gravity and no locality at the quantum level is been assumed, you know, for several years already. So we have string theory, quantum gravity. I'm just quoting here areas of research or theories that are of of quantum gravity, and at the same time include some in one way or another no local effects. So what I mean to say with all this is just very vague, but it's just if I say here in this room that quantum gravity comes with no local effects, nobody's going to freak out in this room. So. But a different thing is to say, okay, I mean, can we make some relation between these two concepts at the classical level. So, and this is less common, but so there is an, but there is some works that pointed out time ago. So I'm I quoted here three, but there are more. So this argument of semi-classical gravity that says, well, if you want to resolve to if you want to resolve two nearby points, then you actually get an obstruction, and the obstruction is just that at some point the space-time. I mean, if you want to resolve them, then you have to put some light into that, and when and if they are close enough. So the energy that you need to resolve them would create a black hole, right? So this basic simple argument tells you that it's impossible actually to resolve arbitrary small distances, right? So I say this is an old argument, right? But what it means is that semi-classical gravity implies no locality as like a fundamental thing, right? So there is a link, right, of no locality and gravity this way. And so the question that I ask is the reverse question. So can we get gravity from no local effects? So the reverse question, right? So kind of create some kind of equivalence, right, between no local theory and gravity. So if one goes again back to this big picture, what I would like to say is that actually the effects of gravity come from that some fundamental theory, and it, at this stage it doesn't matter which one, right? So some fundamental theory is no local, and that would bring gravity as a bonus, right? So this is as I say, that's the big picture, right? But then, so let's go to what we are going. Am I going to do? So what I want to use some notion of no locality, and then one could define, for example, use fuzzy spaces to make your theory no local. So think of quantum theory defined on a fuzzy sphere, for example, or something like that. And that's no local as well, but we're not going to use this approach. So I think would be equivalent, but for what I want to say, I find easier to, as I say, to consider a different organization of no locality. So you can consider theories that are local, and I represent that as the fundamental field depending on one point space, by local to a local stuff, and infinite, right? So, and I'm interested in this one because this would be the easiest one, right? So what I'm interested in is like what no locality brings to the game, right? And so instead of, I'm not going to use that because that'd be trivial, that wouldn't get any no local thing, but I go to the next step, and then, so let's see what no locality brings, right? And so this is the scheme that, so this is what I want to do in this talk, is to show you that by local theory, reasonable, sensible, as much as I could, make this sensible model and simple, how it encodes gravity, right? And so we will actually compare them perturbatively, as I said, right? Up to second order today, and I will show you how it goes in higher orders. So, and here's the big picture that I'm not gonna do it today, but the big picture is like, okay, I mean, this wouldn't be just that. If one, what is a sensible, what is a reasonable no local theory? For us, reasonable means that it has a local limit, right? A local regime, because we describe nature with local theories quite well, right? With good accuracy. So a reasonable no local theory must have a local regime. So if one can show that this no local theory passes through a bilocal effective regime before going to locality, right? So then it would be enough, because then this regime would exist in that, So imagine, for example, a string theory. It's a no local theory because you have strings that are no local, right, objects. But if you freeze out all the degrees of freedom except for the two endpoints, then it's likely that, I'm not proving that, but it's likely that this turn into you can turn that into bilocal theory. So there is some regime of a string theory that surely goes into bilocal theory. So that would include that case. So what I'm saying is that I'm still studying this, but not because I'm saying that bilocal theory is a fundamental final theory, because I think this can be a very general effective regime of many other non-local theories. So what I have in mind is, I don't prove it here because this part doesn't come in this talk, but what I have in mind is more fundamental than just by local theories of gravity. Okay, so I'm gonna say here some generalities of perturbation method that we usually know and stuff. It's just to refresh and to fix the notation, right? So we will consider a theory. In our case, it's going to be a scalar, and then this is a parameter of the theory. I put here B of to make difference between, because I will call kappa the coupling of gravity, and B just this is the coupling of bilocal theory, right? So, but it's just notation. And as always, we expand it. We believe that there is a solution of the theory. The theory is not defined yet, but I will define it later. But we assume that there is a solution of the theory that depends on one parameter, right? And so it's a one parameter family of solutions. And then so we can expand a general solution. We can expand it in terms of this parameter. So this is an assumption of perturbation theory that we always make. And then so this would be schematically what it is. So we have a linear differential operator acting on the field, and then here we have a potential that would depend in general on the parameter and on the field. Then we just do that expansion, make that expansion, plug it here, and equate powers of equal powers of kappa, and then we get a tower of equations, right? This is an schematic way of how it works. So how this works in gravity in particular. So, well, in gravity, we start assuming that our solution depends on one parameter that's related to the Newton constant like that. And then we expand the solution. Another thing that I didn't say, I'm considering here. So I'm going to compare both theories in perturbatively. And so gravity is also by local theory are considered in Minkowski background, right? So, but. You know, that's because I'm doing the comparison perturbatively, which is a tool. So I think the comparison should survive perturbative approach, should be non-perturbative as well. But you know, this is the only way that I can do things right now. Right? And so actually, what we see later is that here could be another background, like anti de Sitter or the sitter, in principle they will work, right? So I don't go into details by that. So the background would be Minkowski for us today. Going back to the perturbative method for gravity, just get Einstein equations, and then you just do the expansion, plug it there, and equate powers of kappa, right? This is basically what we do. It's useful to use this, and we will use these functions, that's why I define them. So just expand the Einstein tensor, let's do this expansion and put it in powers of kappa, and then these functions are defined. And I will use them, just as a name, right? So what happens, a linear order in gravity? So is this equation. So the first equation that we have to solve is this one. You know that this leads to that equation. So I'm considering pure gravity at this stage. So the bilocal model would be like also just with self interactions, but not interacting with any other field, right? Like here. That's for simplicity. Now, another thing. I mean, because I'm going to compare both theories perturbatively, I'm going to compare the space of solutions. So what I will show you is that the space of solutions of gravity, or the general solution of gravity, it's encoded, and I'll tell you how, in the bilocal theory, right? So I'm comparing space of solutions. So space of solutions, you have to fit a gate to talk about the solution in gravity, right? So actually, the gates I will discuss what happens in different gauges later. But for the comparison, you need to fix the gate. And the gates that I fix here that matches the bilocal setup that I will show you later is the Lorentz gate. I will use this transverse trace coordinates, and then with these two, this above equation is just simple the box, right? So again, if you can use you know, there are some gate freedom that you have to fix.
You choose the transverse traceless gate.
Transverse traceless gate, exactly, and a Lorentz gate. So this, well, I mean, this is just a change of variables, right? Yeah. And this is actually a gate, but actually you fix just to lap frame, right? So there are still 4 degrees of freedom that you fix, and then you get gravity waves. Is the gate that I'm using that is the easiest one to compare with that. Okay, so this is just you know, how gravity waves, how can you derive gravity waves in first order in linear gravity, right? First order in gravity. So second order, for second order that we will use as well. So just have to solve this equation, and also there is a freedom of gate. Then we will impose the Lorentz gate for second order. You can always do, and also and imposing that, you get this equation here. So it gets already used. I mean, if you don't impose this gate, And then you have here like around 20 terms, right, on the right hand side. But then this simplifies a lot our life, and then you get an equation like that. To find the solutions for that in this gate, of course, I mean, you just this matrix here comes from first order. So second order are seeded with first order solutions and so on, right? This is the way it works. So the solutions of that, again in the gate in the lab frame, you can find it this way. So basically, second order contribution seeded by first order in the gates that I'm considering. This is the same gates as gravity waves. So it's of this form, right? So it have, basically this is an arbitrary vector that you can choose. So basically it's encoded in these two matrices, right, that are defined here. So this is a result that is.
Sorry, can you remind me of the definition of
P is just the momentum of you know, so P is the momentum of the this appears P and B appear in are data of the first of the first order solution. So P is the momentum that appears on the first order. I mean, appears here, right? That's the and B is just the polarization matrix, right? So these P and B are the same. These are data of the first order, right? These are well-known things, right? So I'm not gonna just we need that these results for later. But so let's talk about the other part of the story, that is bilocal scale field. And so these kind of theories are not new. So bilocal theories were used, they started, like seriously studied by Yukawa in the 50s. So he wrote 3-4 papers that were seminal on this subject, and the point was to explain general things of mesons, right? So he wanted to explain first confinement and, you know, things that happens with mesons and then baryons and stuff, and they were very popular. So now people don't remember or they are not popular at all now, but in the 60s and the 70s there was lot of papers about that. Even Feynman has papers on this, right? So but then QCD came and you know, and people forgot about that, because the point of that was to describe with bilocal theories, to describe these two points of they were quarks, right? And so to describe you know, properties of quarks with this bilocal theory. So so if you think of a field, a bilocal field, what we would do is just to create a meson, or to, you know, to create or annihilate a meson, you know, like and a meson would be a bilocal system. So this is the idea. So we represent it by a field. The bar is just a convenience, because then I'm going to change coordinates, right? And then, but it's a field, a scalar field in this case, that depends on 2 points of space-time instead of one, right?
So you're just looking at the level of the equations of motion. You're not looking at any sort of...
I will be looking today at the level of equations of motion, right? Because the equations of motion that I'm going to show can be derived by an action. Okay, but I'm not going to treat that, because I'm worried about the space of solutions. So that's all I need now, right? And I will talk at the end about you know, the treating at the level of action, how to compare that, and what kind of things that we should learn, because I don't know, you know, I'm not at that stage yet. So
I'm just saying that the gauge fixing is useful when you're integrating over things, but then you get these other complications on the measure and stuff. You're not worried about
things. I'm not worried about that at this stage, right? So I will surely get worried about all those things soon. But what I want to talk today is you know, I want to convince you that that these guys and very simple dynamics on these guys actually bring you some you know, encodes the gravitational degrees of freedom, right? And so what I think is that these guys should be taken seriously.
This is on flat space.
Yeah, well, I mean, this all starts with Minkowski space, right? This all starts with that, and this theory is going to live in Minkowski space the whole time. This doesn't have gravity in it.
But how do you get gravity out of this?
I haven't studied yet.
Do you have a background? No, I'm just curious whether you started off with a background which is Minkowski, and then you want to somehow say that the body penalty generates a gravitational field.
Yeah, exactly. My point is that this theory is going to encode a gravitational field, but it's always going to live in Minkowski space, this field. So, but then the fact that you have 2 points instead of one is gonna open new degrees of freedom, and there is where gravity where the gravity data lives. Right? So this is the idea. So instead of 2 points, what I will consider is these more physical coordinates. So this is we call the center of mass. It's just the average of these 2 points, is the middle point, and this would be the relative coordinates, right? So this have physical meaning because this coordinate is gonna represent the system as a whole, right? If you think of a two-particle system, so this would represent the center of mass of the system, and this would represent the internal movement, right? And the dynamics of this in this space is what's going to be interesting for us, because here is where the new degrees of freedom are going to come out, right?
So in curved space time, this would be a field on the vector on, like the entire tangent space. Phi of x, because r is like the displacement vector.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can think of that, but there are some subtleties with that. You know, with thinking of that way. But
so you think of x and y as points in
space. Points in space, yeah. points in space-time, right? Okay. And then I just, this is just how I coordinate them, okay? And this is why I put a hat here, because I want to use these coordinates that are more physical. So this is a way of splitting, just a change of coordinates, because then it's gonna make sense. So this is gonna be something that is gonna describe the system as a whole. So this would be like the local coordinate, and this is the extra coordinate that comes internal, right? And I'm gonna say that here for not just for technical reasons, but also, you know, I thought of that a lot, but this has to be the definition of this coordinate in Euclideanized. And the reason is that there are problems arising for having two times, right? So we have the time here, and then we apply another time here. And if we keep down these two signatures, time-like and stuff, there are problems happening. Technical problem is there, and conceptual problems. So, you know, everything gets nice when you choose the small coordinate, which is something that we cannot actually test. At the distance, because this what happens at this coordinate is going to be tiny, right? This time here is actually Lorentz. It's not Lorentz signature, right? So okay, so that's a technical detail just to comment, right?
I don't understand detail. Are you saying that you're now switching over and working in Euclidean space rather than in Kropsky space?
No. We are working on Minkowski space. So all the contractions and stuff are gonna be Minkowski, right? So the only thing is that this vector here is gonna have Euclidean. So the definition of that, the time is gonna have an I there. It's gonna have I tau. So the definition of that would be x zero y zero equals I. Right. So an I there. So in a sense that when you contract this R square, you get all positive signature. This is what I'm doing. But I'm not changing. We are just working with one metric. That's been Minkowski, right?
What kind of vector is it? Because if you've got a different contraction rule or different.
No, I don't do a different contraction. I do Minkowski contraction. But this vector has a imaginary time. That's what I'm saying.
But the big X does not.
But the big X, no. And this is the time that we are going to see as the usual time, as the normal time. So this is the whole theory would be like eight coordinates, right?
It's like
and one time, and we would be effectively one time and seven space-like coordinates. This is the way it turns out.
It basically has complex entries. Imaginary entries. So
the way this guy is defined. Yeah. This coordinate is defined like this. Okay. So apart from that, I use this. I impose this symmetry. This is optional, but I think it's quite reasonable. So is that the field is the same as we interchange the points, right? And the reason is that if you think the other way around, if the field is not symmetric under this permutation, why is one point preferred to the other, right? So I think this symmetry is quite reasonable. So that the field is symmetric under the permutation of the points. If one think of a local theory and one particle and split it in two particles, so there shouldn't be any preference of these points. But one can argue that that this condition would relax this condition or not. It's not fundamental in what I'm saying. But I'm applying this for example the next, right? So for one of the things that I want to show is that the field is that the bilocal field is equivalent to a tower of high spin fields. Like if you just expand around locality, You get that. So if you relax that other condition that I said, the last condition, that you would here have a one and a three. So you would get odd spins as well, right? And the effect of that is just that you get even spins. But apart from that, there is nothing new. So the idea is that you can define it tau spins depending just on the local coordinate. That way, just doing a Taylor expand with that. So you see that obviously this encodes a lot of information more than just the local theory, right? And so just organizing it well, you can get, in principle, not just information about spin 2 theory, but also about high spin, right? So, and we will see that actually this theory, by local theory, encodes more than just spin two fields. So the gravity solutions are just a subset of the solutions that you find for a by local field. So, okay, so let's talk about the dynamics. I'm gonna just give a motivation of how I choose the equations of motion, right? So first we want to keep it simple in the coordinates, in the center of mass coordinates, because they are irrelevant for our discussion, right? So these are the usual coordinates, and our discussion focus on the internal coordinates, right? So I want my equations of motions to be free on those coordinates. So that's I don't want to introduce something extra, anything extra. So then I want to make sure that there is an action at a distance between point X and Y. So this will come with a constraint. So I will impose that, that the bilocality is genuine. Otherwise, our field could be, for example, a green function of a local theory. And that wouldn't be, this is not non-bilocal at all. Right? So to have a genuine bilocality, you need to make sure that there's an action at a distance. So I would include that in my equations of motion. And then another thing is that no locality or bilocality should be short range. And this is very important because we don't see that in nature, right? For example, one of the technical problems that you have if you don't Euclideanize the relative coordinate is that the solutions don't get short range. So you actually would see no local effects here around. So that wouldn't be so this is one of the problems that you cannot avoid if you think of the this two time theory, right? Time in the x coordinates, time in the relative coordinates, and then you get a mess. And technically, what happens is that you don't get short range. So this is a very important thing. So these two things. So the bilocality should be genuine and it should be short range. With this concept and no more than that, I get the equations of motion. Okay, so this is the model. I have to say that this model is similar, very similar to the ones proposed in the 70s for mesons, with some differences, right? And the difference comes because first, they considered bilocal model to explain mesons. And mesons are massive particles, right? And we're gonna describe gravitons and things that are massless. What we need is to adapt the model to hold massless solutions. So the models that they used, they didn't have massless solutions. So this there are, slight differences for massless solutions first. And then they normally didn't consider interactions. So they consider like linear theory. We need self-interactions here because we want to compare with gravity, with self-interacting gravity, right? With full gravity, right? So if you put here a zero that we did we will do for first order, then you get you reproduce first a linear gravity, and that's good. But then you should include. This is more ambitious. So we will put here some self-interaction, right? So what are the ingredients here? So this is the box operator for X, and as I promised, that's going to be a free theory in X. So just this term, and this box for a small server kinematics for a small for a relative coordinates. The next term is to ensure short range. So this is a harmonic interaction, and this is going to make sure that the solutions are have Gaussian decay in the R coordinate, and that's for sure is going to be short range. And then this term is necessary as well. We see that this constant here is necessary for the solutions have a shape that is easy to compare with gravity, right? So and the second equation is just a constraint. Now I will talk about this. What's the meaning of this? And this is necessary to assure genuine bilocality. Okay, so the model that I got inspired because there are many with slightly different in the literature, so are basically these two equations and basically the same ingredients with differences in factors and things, but just to, as I say, this was to make sure that there are massless solutions and that we can compare with gravity, right? Alpha here is a measure of bilocality, and when alpha goes to infinity, this gets local, right? So this is easily seen when you see the solutions, and then when you see the solutions, then you see that there are Gaussians that they have alpha as the dimension of mass, right? So alpha always multiplies R. So alpha going to infinity gets to a delta R. In the solution. So this is the limit of locality. So as soon as alpha is finite, then it is bilocal, right? And then let's talk about the constraint here. So the constraint, if we go to the two particle that we have more visual intuition about what's going on. So if we think of these two particle system, the constraint. I will show you. So this is particle one and particle two, and these are the two velocities, the two world lines, and then the constraint equation is basically this one. So this one turns into, if you go to field theory, this one turns into the constraint that I showed you before. And what is this? It's just an average of the two velocities and orthogonal to the position, relative position between them, right? And this is an action at a distance because these two points interact instantly by this kinematical constraint, and so the whole system, the two equations that I show in this picture would be just you can visualize it like a spring joining these two points and interacting instantly in space, and the spring is just the harmonic interaction that they have. So that's a good picture of the system that I showed before, right? So, yeah.
What does it mean when x and y are time-like separate?
In principle, you can have x and y time-like separated. What is important is that the field, the bilocal field is non-zero when you have a space-like separation, right? Because this gives you genuine bilocality. But in principle, there is I don't see any obstruction to consider the bilocal field being non-zero with time-like. Separation.
That's also why you introduced this Euclidean signature in the internal directions.
Oh.
Because you have this R squared term in the.
Yeah.
But what does that actually mean? That,
yeah, that's what I mean.
Sorry.
What you get an intuitive explanation for what it means when X and Y are space-like separation. I'm just wondering. Is there an intuitive explanation for what it means when X and Y are time lags separate.
I think you have, I don't have a precise answer for that because I thought of that. And I don't know exact. I think well, I thought of that as a space-like separation. So when I thought of internal coordinates, I thought of space-like coordinates. That's the way I thought of this, right? So technically, there is no. Well, I tell you, there's not a problem because then there is a moment I'll see in a bit that you have to actually integrate on the whole space of this field, and then I make use of this, and then there's no a technical problem. But about the picture that you can have, I don't know how to say, right? Actually, to be honest, I studied all this work with two Lorentzian signature for both, and then I went into inconsistencies, and then I had to change my mind into that, and it all made sense afterwards. Right? But yeah, and so for me it was a little bit weird as well. So I don't know how to make a nice picture for you now. So okay, so for linear order, we don't have potential there, self-interaction, and then we have these two equations, right? And then we'll look for solutions of these equations, and then this is a general solution of this system, right? And so what we have here is some form momentum that is massless, as I say, because I was looking for massless solutions, and then this matrix here. And this matrix here, if you just get this answer and plug into the equations, it turns out that has this form that I'm sure it sounds familiar. So what you have here is just that, this one, right? So you have basically this box here that resembles. That looks very close to gravity waves, polarization matrix, and then these C's here that don't exist in the gravity side, but here they exist, right? So basically, at first order, if you make this C that are constants, so that you can make this zero, so the subset of solutions that have C zero are easily compared. We will make the comparison more clearly, but now you can see, right? So in general, just to give you an advanced thing, in general, what's going to happen is that the solutions at higher order are going to be polynomials here with some decay here. So this, for example, as we were talking about the signature of this R. So this is all, this is not problematic, and this is a Gaussian, nice Gaussian stuff because we are taking the right signature. Otherwise, we would have something here that is growing, like a mode that is growing crazy, right, on one direction. And then would be like no local effects that are macroscopic. And that this was a problem. Now, in general, we're going to have some polynomial that can be complicated here. And this polynomial is going to encode in a natural way, is going to encode gravity data, like we see here. So this is a. This is what was going to happen now. So this is at linear order. So what happens at second order? So at second order, so what kind of term we should have here as a second order interaction? And I choose this because this term is quite natural if you think of, you know, so we have to make this equality, make some sense of this equality, right? And we have here some bilocal data, some bilocal fields, and something that depends on x and y. So all we have here has to depend on x and y. So, and also second order, so we should have phi 1 twice. So the natural way of putting a term like that is integrating in the C coordinate. So, and this prefactor that I put here is just for convenience, could be just the difference that it makes is that if you don't put this, you're going to have the second order decay in the Gaussian, the part of the Gaussian that is decaying is going to have a different, like second order is gonna decay quicker than first order, and the third order is gonna decay in a so you're gonna have like some of Gaussians with different decay, and if you include those three factors here, then you make all the solutions decaying at the same rate. So it's just for that. It's not essential this prefactor, but this term, which is quite natural, right? It's the term that one would include here for third order. We'd include here two integrals on z and w, for example, on two variables to make the whole thing be bilocal as well.
Wasn't R the perturbation parameter?
No, the perturbation parameter is alpha. R is a coordinate, right?
Yeah,
and the perturbation, goes with alpha. Alpha is the parameter that is the perturbation parameter and is the bilocal parameter, right?
So your exponent should be regarded as an expansion to the correct order in alpha? Or?
No. I mean, this is just a factor, right? I'm including this factor here for convenience. You could actually forget about that. I don't know. It's nice to include this factor because then the space of solutions at the end of the day are going to factorize all the Gaussian decay on one side, right? And because because I'm free to choose the model the way I want, and I do that way. But this is not essential.
I noticed you say these are mass. Look at the first order. You say massless solutions. Are there massive solutions?
No.
So they're all massless.
They're all massless in this setup. Yeah. So and then the constraints stays the same. When we compare just an advance, when we compare this with gravity, what's the meaning of this with this constraint in gravity? I didn't say that before. I want to say it now here. So why do you choose this? This is deciding an action at a distance, right? This is like saying, okay, these points are interacting instantly, but why do you average the velocities? Well, it's a geometrical easy thing to do, but you could choose different ways, and there are things in the literature that they choose here in minus. It's different, you know, but it would be an action at a distance. So actually, you can this constraint, this action at a distance is, you know, we are free to impose them. And they didn't understand at that time why one was preferred to another one. And so some authors use one action at a distance. When the truth is, like, you have to decide an action at a distance. But there is a freedom to choose that. And the truth is that this action at a distance that described in this equation, it's the one that matches Lorentz gate. So I haven't done it, but other action at a distance would lead to solutions in other gates, right? So this is a thing that how interpret this in terms of gravity. This leads to the Lorentz gate, right? Condition.
Your box R, little in the top equation, the second net, is that a Euclidean signet? Is that really Laplacian?
Yeah. Well, this is once you choose R, like you've chosen R with some. Let me write here. So once you've chosen R to be I time, well, 1 minus I 0, so x like that. When you've chosen that, and then you just put here tau, then the derivatives with respect to r are just the derivative with respect to tau. And but here, if you put mu, I mean, this contracts with a Minkowski signature, right? So this is the only difference that you include here, but the contraction goes with Minkowski the whole time, right?
So what's the answer? Is the answer yes? I'm asking if that differential operator is effectively a Laplacian. In other words,
okay.
Sum of its partial squares.
Okay.
Plus partials.
Okay. When you write your functions with R,
Yeah.
They go with there is a normal D'Alembertian. Because I'm saying this. So this would be this operator and this contracted with this. The only thing is that okay.
You made an imaginary when that is zero. You made a. I can't quite follow, but.
Sorry, like that, right? And then.
If you put an I there, then you'll get. If for I zero, you put an I, then you'll get the sign just switch.
Can you write the first term of that summation?
Oh yeah. So that'd be this, right? Okay, like this, minus.
Right.
Okay, and what is R0? R0 is this tau, right? Which is IT1 and this.
So that becomes a plus. It's no longer.
Oh, in terms of the original coordinates, yeah. That becomes a plus. That's why, exactly. So why is all this, right? Because we have this guy, right? Here in the solutions, and then you know we want all the no local effects that are here. We want all them to be not really short range. And then we shouldn't allow this thing here to have something that grows, right?
Right. So are you imposing some boundary conditions on this dependence? I mean, if you allowed it to blow up at r equals infinity, you could have other solutions. Right?
Yeah, exactly. But I wouldn't call them any physical solutions, right?
But that's what I'm asking. Do you have in mind some specific boundary conditions?
No.
Which solutions are physical and which solutions are not?
Exactly. So if we take the conventions that I'm taking here and stuff, then you always get these kind of terms, and you don't get any problem. You don't need to impose any extra conditions. So that because of this, right? So otherwise, if you keep the time mode here growing, I mean, this is a different thing, right? And then it gets really messy. But like that, you never get a problem, right? It's always decaying nicely. So is everything okay with
I'll think about it.
Okay. Yeah, we can discuss because I mean these are very important things, and this took me part of the time investigating this. I needed to solve this thing out, right? Because you know, otherwise this wouldn't make sense, because no local effects would be like you know, like as big as you wanted, and this couldn't be, right? So, solutions of this system. Once you do the integration here, you plug the general first order solutions that we found, and then you so a general solution would have this ansatz, and would have this form, right? So just writing it in here. So okay. So all the, you have to take here is that. Remember that first order the first order solutions come with VC, and VC disappears in gravity, right? So be zero in gravity. So when we're gonna compare these theories or these solutions with the gravity solutions, just think that this goes to zero, because for first order it's gonna go to zero, and for second order you have to keep the first order solutions, right? So this is gonna simplify a lot, and I'll show you how it gets, right? So as I say, Z must be zero, and then for first order we just have to do this we find this relation, right? So first order solutions in gravity are come from a bilocal field like that. So very easy way, just two derivatives with respect to R, and this. So all this is, you know, all this is as I say, C equals zero, And for second order, you remember that just these matrix where they encoded second order solutions, right? And you find them just with the expressions that I showed you before, just making first, when you make r equals zero, you have to include here the background, okay? Like here, and otherwise you just do two derivatives. And so they both come very easily and nicely from that. And this cannot be, I mean, this this is the main result of the thing. And this cannot be a coincidence, right? Because at first order, you can maybe recover that and you can say, oh, you've chosen the model, and so you get that. Okay, fine. You go to second order, it's very complicated, it's a mess. In both sides, and then that you get this match so nicely between these two theories is not a coincidence. And at higher orders, it's easy to see that you get enough information. Well, actually, what you see is that in the bilocal theory there is more than gravity, right? Because we are the space of solutions first. Here you have to make z equal zero, so z equal can be arbitrary in bilocal theories, but now to match with gravity, we need to get the subset of those solutions, right? And this is supposed to be the case in the bilocal theory to have for higher order to encode higher order solutions in gravity the same, right? Which is surprising. So let's think of higher order term. In gravity, it's going to be of the form like this, right? Two derivatives of the here I put it's just schematic. So I put just the h1 to the n, right? So the solutions of the first order, and the bilocal counterparts are all this form, right? So why this should match and why they do match at second order? So it's puzzling, at least you know, first sight. And what happens? So why, I'm just gonna tell you what is behind that. So the solutions, the way they're gonna come up are this way. So the solutions by local field are gonna be polynomial in the coordinates and with this exponential decay. As I said before, if you don't include these prefactors in the interaction terms, if you don't include these prefactors, then you would have here a sum of different of decays with different alpha 1,4 one and different factors here. So I don't think this is essential. So you can decide not to keep these prefactors and stuff. But if you want to, but there is always some prefactor to put there if you want to keep the general solution to have the same decay, right? And then all the information. This is way is a nice way of splitting all the information of the gravity that we want to extract is encoded in these polynomials. And so why this match works? It's a simple mathematical identity that involves functions that are Gaussians with polynomials. When you integrate that, you can prove that integrating iteratively by parts, you can show that this is actually gets a derivative of the polynomial. So this mathematical identity is behind the possibility and behind the actual math that we're making, right? So, okay. So at this stage, one more thing before finishing out, I'm close to the end. But so people normally ask me what if it has anything to do with holography. So are the things that we're doing has something to do with holography? Because why do they ask that? Is because in principle, what we are doing is just describing some gravity thing with this gravity theory with a non-gravitational theory, right? A bilocal theory, and so it resembles gravity. When you actually do the a comparison, I mean, you describe some gravity theory with a theory which is not gravitational, right? But there are many differences, so first, the bilocal theory is not local, and when you do holography, you have a local theory and another local theory. So this is the first difference, right? So also a local theory is not conformal. Normally, if you I'm thinking of a photography in ABS, CFT, this kind, then you have the local theory in that, if you compare to holography, should be conformal in that sense. And by local theory is clearly not conformal because alpha has dimensions of mass and is a parameter that we need for bilocality. And also a bilocal theory is describing a four-dimensional theory using a four-dimensional theory, right? And in holography, you have so it should be three-dimensional, because in holography, the one that is not gravitational has one dimension less. So this is the way that holography works, with one dimension more and one dimension less. But so all this seems like very different. And what I want to point out is that there is a limit that this could be actually could make contact with holography. And if you think of this being a coordinate of one of the coordinates of the four space time, right? Coordinates, and alpha, this alpha parameter. If you take the limit of alpha going to infinity and this shrinking, this coordinate is shrinking to zero. Then you would get something dimensionless, because this cancels all the dimensions, this mass, this space, right? So this would be a dimensionless parameter, and this theory would be localized on one point of the, so would be one dimensionless, and would be local because alpha goes to infinity. So my point here is, like, if there is any relation of what I'm doing with holography, should go through this limit. That's what I believe, right? And and within that assumption, lambda would be the coupling constant of the conformal theory. So this is all just So I've been asked this question before. Then I come with this answer, and I think this should be investigated further, like many other things, right? So in principle, I believe that this limit would be interesting. And would be maybe the link of these two concepts, right? So summary, what we have learned so far is that all linearized and second order gravity solutions in a particular gate, that's Lorentz gate, are contained in the bilocal field, so as a subset of solutions. Like an action at a distance here, it's a Lorentz gate in gravity. There is more than gravity in the bilocal field. So because the bilocal field, I'm focusing on just spin two, right? But then there is a whole tower of spins that I haven't explored, right? And so that's good news. Because I don't think these two things are equivalent, and I think this bilocal theory is a more and can bring new aspects. So it's likely that higher order smarts, I haven't proved it here, but it's not something that I would pursue doing third order myself, but I don't think it's hard to prove that at all orders you can reproduce gravity solutions, right? So it's something reasonable. And then for future works, I would find some final shape for V, right? So we did just the interaction quadratic term, but find the potential that would match with gravity and get something non-perturbative, but to make non-perturbative statements. Now we haven't worked at the level of actions because we just, we wanted to make sense of all this, and to make sense we just compare solutions, a space of solutions. But the next step is clearly goes through going at the level of actions, and if you go to a level of actions, there is some questions that are important too. So how do you recover diffeomorphism invariance in the bilocal picture? This is some question that I would pursue first, right? Because with solutions we fix the gates and that's it, right? But if we want to go to the actions, then they should be written somehow in the bilocal action. They should be written in a way the diffeomorphism invariance. Coupling to matter, because this is pure gravity. Cosmological cluster would be easy. I think this step is the easiest, right? Of course, this all is just classical, no? So the interesting thing should come when we quantize it. So is the dialogical theory renormalizable, or is finite theory? This is, many people think that this is the case, this is finite theory. So so that'd be an interesting thing. Again, if we find the good action, then we can do quantization with path integral and nice things, right? Another question that one can ask is what are the conditions, general conditions for a non-local theory to be effective by local? So this comes with the beginning of the talk, where I said that that some non-local theories or many local theories should have an effective by local. So make this statement clear. So what do you need to impose to a non-local theory to have a by local regime, an effective by local regime, right? So this is a question, a clear question that I don't know if it's easy to answer, but I think it's interesting. And the relation with holography to investigate it further, with the slide before that I show, a way of understanding it. And then to find modifications of all general relativity by, all these high spins. So investigate these high spins should give modifications like high derivative in the action, kind of modifications of GI is what I expect. And that's it. Thanks.
Some time for a couple of questions, maybe. I'm trying to understand where the second order term came from. So you just—is it correct that you just cooked it up? And then the surprising thing is that such a simple term actually was able to agree with the second order gravity in the particular games that you were using.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there some systematic way to generate? I mean, I know you don't plan to do the third order one, but suppose you gave it to a machine or something. How would you know what third order term to write down?
Okay. So the second order term, I've read similar terms in the literature. So first thing, right? So I got inspiration from somehow, So it's not I invented that first thing. So why it is? I thought of that. What is this? My approach was make the simplest thing, right? And so the fact that it's an integration, I don't see any way out. If you include two bilocal things, I want to make one bilocal. You have to integrate one thing with the other, right? And there are the different ways of doing making this coupling. Basically, because this is a way of interacting very particular, right? Simple but very particular. But then you could couple in a little more twisted way, like why don't you include something that depends on so you're integrating with respect to set variable, the C variable, right? And then why don't you include a function in front of it that goes with set, for example? So as an example, and I didn't include any of that. So this is simplicity, and I don't have an answer for that. Maybe that's why I don't know the final potential, because I don't know how to read. So for third order, so I would write 3 5 ones and 2 integrals, right? But then should I include any functions and stuff? I don't know how it's gonna go, right? So I don't have any systematic way. That's the answer. That I don't have a systematic way to generate this term.
And there's a free coefficient in front of you.
And this free coefficient, I think you can relax this free coefficient. I include that because I realize that the space of solutions phi 2, just the one decay with a different Gaussian than the other one.
No,
and then
I don't mean that. I mean, there's just a number. You could have used 3 times that.
Exactly.
So how do you know?
Exactly. So I think once you make a connection with gravity, and then you just fix I haven't fixed a recipe how to get gravity data from bilocal. Like I just show you these two examples, but I didn't give you a recipe for that, and I don't have it yet. So things would be much easier. But then at that point, then you should know what kind of numbers you should include in this expansion of the potential that I don't know yet.
More questions?
So do you think all of this should also work in a different gauge? I mean, you picked Lorentz gauge.
Yeah.
What was the reasoning exactly? And do you think that?
Well, I mean, the questions get simple, right? So in the Lorentz gauge, the questions get simple in the gravity side, and it get very simple and so I could compare easily, right? So I think in a different gauge, equations would be different. The constraint clearly would be different because the constraint is linked to the Lorentz constraint. So for me, that's clear. And so this equation would be different. And the other equation maybe as well. So because I needed just to choose one gate. I chose the simplest one in terms of computation and all that. But in principle, yes. And this, so the comparison here is at the level of solutions, and if you get to the level of actions, and then we understand how diffeomorphism invariance comes in all that game and stuff, then I could answer that, much better than I. This is. I'm sorry, but this is a little bit preliminary. It's something new, and it's new for me. I'm learning about that, and struggling with technical things as well. For me, surprising that it can get that far. Yeah,
I'm still confused about this imaginary versus real. So I think I could probably ask the question in two different ways. One way would be. Could it be that what you really have is a local theory with a certain kind of internal space for the field, which lives in a Euclidean space or something?
Yeah.
Maybe that's one way of asking.
I think effectively you can think that way. But I don't want to get rid of the bilocal picture of having two points in space and the, So I wouldn't go to the say, well, okay. So effectively what I'm doing is just a local theory with some internal space that I'm opening up, right? And it happens to be Euclidean there and stuff. Because, there are some, so for example, you could decide, okay, in that internal picture, you have a different metric.
Right.
And there is a difference. So there are terms that go like this in a constraint, like that, for example. So how you contract this? You need one metric to contract this because here you include R and you include X.
But
so,
in this bilocal picture of these two particles, don't you have a preferred Euclidean metric, namely like the center of mass frame?
Exactly. This sets a time, and this is the time you're gonna use like a normal time, and you define your Hamiltonian with that time stuff. And the other time. That is the relative time that have completely need to have different properties, right? Cannot be, otherwise you run into problems. And this is the core of the, I think the core of the problem. What I think, for example, with these kind of terms is that you cannot decide that you have two spaces with two metrics. And this internal space has its own rules and stuff because you have terms that mix them up.
Sort of soldering form between the two spaces,
right,
or something like that. But the other way I could ask the question is, suppose you went back and wrote your equations in terms of the original variables, not the sum and difference variables, but just the original variables.
Yeah.
How would they look? Maybe that would show, would there be some imaginary terms in them, or what exactly?
Yeah.
How do they look?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you can just do the transformation. You get the solutions, solve the equation, get the solutions, and then you go to here, and then change these by the variables like this, right? And then you see that here what you would have is this T1 minus T2 kind of thing, the square, and so minus, and then it would be plus, right? So this is what you would have here. So what you would have here is T square plus X square plus C square, like that. So all the coordinates being spaced like this. So that would make sense in this Gaussian, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite. You're saying it would. Are you redoing the problem with?
No, I mean.
I'm just asking, how would the equation? You have some field equations, more constrained and a sort of dynamical equation. We should be able. You just made a change of variables at some point, so
yeah.
We should be able to write those equations in terms of the original variables.
Oh yeah, exactly. So yeah, I was writing the solutions in terms of the variables. But
I'm just wondering, I can't see it well. How would they look in particular? Would they have imaginary complex coefficients in the equations?
Yeah.
Would you? I mean, the worry would be by having this flip of this introduction of the square root of minus one. You might worry that when you go back, you've effectively broken Lorentz invariance because you picked out a distinguished time direction. I don't know. I'm just
okay. I haven't done this.
It might be easier to.
But maybe it's a way. It's a good way to interpret what's going on, right? So maybe it's a good way to go to the equations and get the original coordinates written there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I will do. I mean, it's not very hard to do this. Yeah. Yeah. And would be clarifying. Yeah. Thanks.
Any more comments? Just otherwise, thank you.
Okay. Thanks.